important related point here. I have said before that a ship with plasma jet propulsion can reach up to about 100,000 kilometers per second, which is around one-third light speed. Note that this is propulsion, and even this way, it creates a considerable velocity. There are some known elements on Earth within the laws of mass and acceleration that are valid. Between them, the law that an object accumulating great speeds increases its mass, creating the need to augment exponentially the energy required to keep on accelerating. So, when reaching light speed, an object would have a mass equivalent to a singularity, or virtually infinite mass. Therefore, the motors as well would have to produce an infinite thrust. While increasing the mass of a ship operating with nuclear, not zero-point, reactors, the mass of the reactor and the element that provides the energy, be it enriched uranium or nuclear fusion matter-antimatter, would also cause the rise in mass to affect the very capacity of the propellant element to give the equivalent energy necessary to continue the acceleration. Do you understand so far? Although this rise of mass of the propellant element inside the reactor does not affect nor apply to zero-point energy reactors by depolarization of the quartz toroids Merkabas, such as those used by Taygetan ships, this problem of mass accumulation, consequently an accumulation of drag, does not affect us, even though technically it should. This is because the amount of energy produced by a zero-point reactor is not affected by a rise in mass caused by the accumulated speed. An ionizing nuclear reactor by disintegration of heavy metals, uranium base, gives more energy as its mass increases with increasing speed. The greater the mass in the core of the ionizing reactor, the greater the radiation, and the greater the radiation, the greater the energy. But a zero-point reactor does not give more energy by increasing its speed. Its energy production remains stable, since said energy does not come from any element related to mass that the energy gives when disintegrating atomically. The ionizing reactor uses the atomic disintegration of elements in the nucleus that are radioactive, such as enriched uranium. A zero-point reactor does not depend on any object in the nucleus that gives energy, since it depends on other principles, more complex ones, but in turn more stable. Put more clearly, a nuclear reactor does augment its power when increasing speed, to the same extent that it accumulates mass. Although there are other problems there, it's not so straightforward. A zero-point reactor does not augment its power by the craft increasing in mass when increasing its speed. Therefore, a ship that depends on a zero-point reactor is affected by the ship's mass accumulation, causing more and more drag as it accelerates. This limits the ship's speed and acceleration power in jet propulsion mode. However, with a trick we do, we are not affected by the increase in mass. Trick of the ships themselves. As a ship increases its speed and consequently also the mass drag, the same immersion toroid of the ship that also serves as a protective shield against fortuitous materials, stones and space debris, with algorithms controlled by the ship's computer, it reduces the mass of the ship, making it lighter. Thanks to this strategy or maneuver, a ship can continue to accelerate to at least one-third light speed or 100,000 kilometers per second. These velocities are useful for interplanetary flights, but they are too slow for interstellar travel. At this velocity, it would still take a ship 1,320 light-years to travel the 440 light-years from Taygeta to Earth. As we already have explained, that is why we jump to ether. This is also in case some scientists come up with a claim that 100,000 kilometers per second is too fast to be achieved with action-reaction propulsion alone. And he or she will be right. Just that by changing the density of the ship, it relieves this problem. On a supraluminar flight, a ship can travel directly from the origin to the destination, or it can do so by lapses. In the frequency map, say from Taygeta to Earth, the base frequencies of each point between Taygeta and Earth are known. If you want to be at the midpoint, you should only schedule the jump to that point and not all the way to Earth. Or you can take a series of jumps, where a ship can change the motion vector, seeing the supraluminar flight from the perspective of a traditional distances and positions map. Jumping to pre-programmed points is the only way to draw a trajectory of movement vectors for a ship that travels through ether, where there is neither time, nor distances, nor positions on a map. Unless you want to stop at other sites or planets on the way from Taygeta to Earth, this is not very practical if you only want to go from point A to point B. And logically, this is valid for any point A and any point B, not just from Taygeta to Earth. But this does have a purpose, and it is to map interstellar space frequencies in order to improve the details of the existing ones and to create new maps of unexplored sites. A ship will momentarily stop in deep and empty space, take the gravity reading and ether frequencies at that point, record it in the computer's memory, and will proceed to the next point. This way, we can go overlapping the specific frequencies of each point on a traditional distance map with their respective ether frequency points. Now, not only can this be done, also by understanding the gravitational or ether flow, the same thing, in deep space, you can mathematically know what would happen at the unexplored point. For example, look at this. 2 plus 2 is 4, 4 plus 2 is 6, 6 plus 2 is 8. And 1320 means what in this context? Comments Dor Kalel.
And that is the only space of a single plane. Missing here is adding the temporal planes that are superimposed on the one described by Svaru.
I do not know, Svaru. I don't know what it means. 2 and 2 is 4, 4 and 2 is 6, 6 and 2 is 8. This is known space. 1, 3, 2, 0. This is the unknown, without maps. But we know that the mathematical dynamics of the ether in that place is from the previous sum plus 2. Then, if 2 and 2 is 4, 4 and 2 is 6, 6 and 2 is 8, is the dynamics of the mathematics of the frequency harmonics of the ether of a known place adjacent to the unknown, we can conclude that the ether frequency 1320 has in its immediate space 1318 and then 1322. The ship did not take readings at 1318 or 1322, but mathematically we know that they are there. Although these are irritatingly simple numbers, and those of the true frequencies are numbers with 18 zeros, interacting with extremely complex mathematical formulas that reflect the mathematical interaction of the frequency harmonics of the ether gravitational flow of a place. They obey the same principle. Mathematically, you can know from the readings of a place its relation with the next one. It will tend to be consistent with the same mathematical principles. With this, you can predict a stellar frequencies map without the need for a ship to take the readings in each place. If 2 and 2 is 4, 4 and 2 is 6, 6 and 2 is 8, then 1320 plus 2 is 1322, and the previous one is 1382 plus 2, and that is 1320. Am I explaining myself well? Knowing the mathematical dynamics of the known space, you can know the mathematical dynamics of the unknown space. The ether is the known and unknown space alike. The ether is the gravity, or the gravity is a flow or a current within the ether, as an ocean current is a part of the sea. As such, you have nothing like it on Earth, but this is stellar navigation of only one level, quite easy. As Kalel said, we would also need to add temporal layers, thereby increasing the complexity of the mathematical algorithms. Comments Dor Kalel.
Yes, if I can just add something. As Svaru explains, not only do you lack the temporary elements of past, present and future, but in the example of the series, the flow frequencies of the ether are fixed, when, in real space, they are variable. I mean, they don't obey fixed factors like 1320, but are in a progression of numerical frequencies, moving in what is perceived from the consciousness of the ship as time.
Yes, although that would add even more complexity, and that's why it's a harmonic of a frequency, because it is not a fixed frequency, but a mathematically perfect sequence that causes or forms what is perceived as a place. It is music. That is, music is a perfectly intertwined sequence of frequencies, with each note or group of notes relating to one another that make up the music. It is the same in the ether. The harmonics of the frequencies are or develop in a perfectly calculable way. This creates a soup of frequencies, where each harmonic creates standing waves that in turn form the objects that we see in each place. And the tempo in music, the rhythm, the duration of each note, as it relates to those played by the other instruments, form an auditory soup of sound waves inside the concert hall, which are nothing more than that, sound waves. With the intervention of a consciousness, they are given a meaning. The concert itself as art, as music, as something beautiful. The soup of sound waves inside the concert hall would be the equivalent of the gravitational flows inside the ether. Only with the intervention and interpretation of a consciousness, it can be interpreted as a concert or a material place. Suns, planets, civilization and everything else, they are only gravitational flows. But the consciousness interprets them and converts them into something with meaning. By the way, 432, which adds up to 9, is a harmonic frequency that is constructive because it promotes the formation of standing waves according to the frequencies of the mind or the consciousness. It encourages them. That's why they add 9. If it is not a mathematically accurate perfect sequence, music, the standing wave collapses, disintegrating matter back to the ether. So, to create more complex music, from a single flute to a complete concert, mathematical algorithms that rule the sound waves are added, all perfectly intertwined to create a complete and complex concert. In the same way, the standing waves, increasing in complexity and harmonics, also create more and more complex things, such as solar systems, planets, constellations. If you want to map a smaller area, such as a solar system, you can move the ship with gravity or plasma jet engines while taking gravity value readings with the computer. But this only applies to smaller areas. As for interstellar or entire constellation areas, the speed of a gravitational or plasma jet engine is too low to be able to make a star map in a period of time acceptable to the ship's crew, seat time, or measured from inside the ship as perceived by the crew. So we resort to jump at supraluminar speed from one calculated point to the next. Although this leaves jump spaces without measurements, having the flow readings and gravity values between the measured points is sufficient for the computer to fill the spaces with the correct values. Given that we know the algorithms that rule the frequency harmonics of those areas. Asks Robert. And somehow you cannot access the ether and get all those coordinates without much effort? You need a reference. The reference is the gravity readings. Directly, it is possible to connect the consciousness with the all, with the source. In theory, yes. It's just that the data necessary to guide ships through deep space without exploration need numbers and values of measurement in the order of trillions of data. With the mind consciousness, we cannot handle those numbers. Leaving it to the computer to calculate it, in a way, this is also accessing the source, because the quantum computer of the ship is designed to access the ether for its own calculations. Calculating probabilities in a quantum field, where the quantum field refers to the ether and to the timelines committed or associated with the consciousness that observes all this. In this case, the computer consciousness that emulates or increases the power range of who is piloting the ship, a consciousness in biological body. And how far did you map out the space? Where have you not yet gone to map? It is not possible to map out everything. They are more like corridors in space that can be used, like a network, where some points in the highly traveled space we can say we know well. In theory, the Milky Way and the M33, partially other galaxies. Areas can be explored using only mathematical algorithms, comparing them with what we already have. When going exploring other galaxies, although it is possible and has been done, there is more not known about those trips at those distances than what is known. Even knowing that everything is at the same distance as seen from the ether, being that from the ether, everything is accessed at the same speed. But in practice, the problem is that ships go to explore and do not return. Asks Robert. And all this gets complicated when you change timelines. That is, would we have a star map for each timeline and for each density? That is another problem, and why the ships do not return. The variables are too many when entering timelines. I don't know how to describe temporal manipulation with ships without first getting into the gigantic issue of what time is. Let us now enter the subject of time.